fighting, I'll do a little bit of intro and cover a few details. So I work for InterVarsity's Emerging Scholars Network. The Associate Director of Emerging Scholars Network, Tom Grosch, is also with us. And we would love to connect with you at the InterVarsity booth. We'll also have an InterVarsity reception on Sunday evening after State of the ASA, and we'd love for you to come if you're on site at that time. And we have this collaboration with the American Scientific Affiliation. We have a lot in common, and we've collaborated to support early career members the last couple of years, and that's been wonderful. So that's how we got to this. And I think that we are, I think maybe we'll go ahead and start, and if the next speaker needs to slip in after.
If Dorothy doesn't come, you guys have more time.
But let me introduce Kevin Ford, our guest moderator for this. Kevin is... welcome, Kevin. Have a seat. So, perfectly reasonable. So Kevin has been the MIT grad chaplain with InterVarsity for quite a while now and is really good at the job. He's also a Boston expert. So if you want to know anything from where to get ice cream to the most obscure historical site you can find, ask Kevin. He knows all of it. So, Kevin, I'll let you take it away and introduce our speakers. Thank you so much.
Okay, the topic of this is networking for the common good, but it's also networking for your own good. And you might say, why bother with this? I'm a historian. These guys are scientists. As a historian, I'd like to mention the fact that really the birth of modern science could not be separated from networking. Starting with Francis Bacon and the change from alchemists to natural philosophers, as scientists were known then, one of the basic parts of what they were doing was we have to network with each other. And so you had these organizations that sometimes were even semi-secret. One was called the Republic of Letters, right, in which all these folks were in correspondence with each other across borders, even when their countries were at war. They were writing each other about their scientific discoveries. Another one was called the Invisible College. That was an immediate predecessor to the Royal Society. And it is no coincidence that the Royal Society, founded in 1660, just a couple months after the General Post Office was founded in London. The two went together because one of the basic parts of being a scientist is that you are not in this by yourself. You are building networks. And if you're not doing that, you're missing out, not just for your own good, but for the common good, because it is in these networking opportunities that your field advances, and on a selfish note, that you would advance. Our panel is to my left here. Let me introduce them quickly. We have Tim Opperman in the middle. He is a CSCA, and I don't know what that means.
The Canadian Scientific
Affiliation. Canadian Scientific, okay. He's the early career representative. He did a MA at Regent College and his thesis on original sin and the evolution of morality. So not a natural philosopher.
Alchemist.
Alchemist. And then Dorothy Boris at the end is an ecology professor right here at Gordon College. Got all these wonderful swamps and lakes and forests all around her. She's the chair of the Gordon Biology Department and the co-author of Pearson's Environmental Science Textbook, and has worked on a lot of science and faith issues. And then on my immediately left, Bob Kaida, who is a researcher in physics at Princeton, former president of the ASA, also works in his local church, but I think I first heard you at a round table, or was it a Veritas? But you speak at
a lot of these things.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And Bob, why don't you start us out?
Right, thanks very much. Actually, speaking of speaking, one of the things that I think that might be a challenge is people might think of networking as striking up conversations. for, well, personal gain or all these kinds of stereotypes that make people very uncomfortable. And I'll have to make a confession, myself and a lot of us are introverts by nature, in the sense that what happens is that if I am here or asked to speak on a topic, I have a lot of experience and have no problem with it. But in a social setting, I really have to work hard to then say, all right, how am I going to start up a conversation? But instead, if you think of it as something that then should be part of what you do naturally, I think that'll help overcome some of these barriers. Because in fact, the kind of networking we're in fact talking about is networking or conversing or communicating in something that you already have a topic that you want to talk about. So from that point of view, I agree wholeheartedly. The development of these societies where people get together, read their papers, express their research is part and parcel of the scientific establishment. And that's part of networking. And so, of course, to state the obvious, you're here at a meeting like this. And what you do is that you should develop this ability to go ahead, interact, hear, listen, as something that is a, to use a cliche, a life skill that you need in your professional goal. So from that point of view, think it not so much as a way to, so-called, in quotes, advance your career, because one of the things I like to emphasize is to stick to what you love and what you're interested in. Consider these as opportunities to talk about what you love and what you're interested in. And if you keep that kind of focus, it helps those of us who are naturally introverted to go ahead and talk about our passions. And that's a good starting point for networking. And the other thing that I want to talk about is that this is a kind of perspective I was thinking about, which is to consider networking from the perspective of what I call servanthood, in the sense that what you're trying to do is to go ahead and to then serve the community in going ahead and then trying to express what's of interest to you, to try to then communicate this, but at the same time, if you have a servant's heart, with the humility to go ahead and listen to what others have to say, so that then it becomes part of a lifelong process. In fact, just last night, I was answering an email from a student I was supervising, and I made a suggestion on a paper. And as it were, I was wrong, she was right. And so what I said is, that's a good point. So let's revise your paper according to what you just pointed out, and then send it in for publication. It's a lifelong experience. And so taken in that context, it's a natural thing that we should be doing, and thank God for the opportunities he's given us to do that. That's right, Bob, you can go.
Brilliant. Timothy?
Bob, thanks for sharing, and thanks for saying everything I was just about to say. Nothing more to add. I'll share a little bit. I feel like I didn't express the great irony of being the student and early career representative while not being a student or in my early career. So I'm in the middle, and I would love to pick all of your brains about next step forward. But that doesn't mean I can't talk about networking, because I feel like I do that quite well. I'm one of those weirdos who's an extrovert and have no problem striking up conversations.
Didn't mean to say that.
It doesn't feel weird to me. And so, but I recognize that is on a different side of a spectrum. That also means that I often do it really poorly. So I would want to say encourage you to be very strategic with your networking. So it's fine. I'm fine with coming up and meeting anybody and then being like, what was that name? What was their name? Where did they go? I don't even know anything about them. I talked to them for an hour and I can't recall. And I'm lazy. And it's the worst. So I only learn from my own failure and recognize that when I do want to be very strategic, then I'll front load it. And then I'll have I'll do my research. I'll know who I want to talk to, and then prepare, briefly, good questions to ask. I'm thinking of the thing that you're doing right now. Like Bob said, is that you're already ahead of the game by being in a room like this, and that's. I wish I would have had something like this in my undergrad. I was just oblivious to it. And so finding it later on, it was really helpful. I found this to be really helpful. And then the conversations I've had over my time with the CSEA are usually around, like, okay, who is 10 years ahead of me doing what I want to do? Who's 20 years ahead of me? Well, seek those people out and ask them. It's hard when you can't find them in person. Well, be bold. Write an email. It's awkward. That's way more awkward than a conversation to me. I'm going to walk up and say hi to somebody. Writing an email, I'm like, my words are the worst. And so being very clear with directed questions to someone who is, doing what you want to do, well, you don't want to waste someone's time. Well, know what you're going to say. Know what you're going to ask them. So don't just say, hey, what should I do with my life? That's the worst question to ask somebody. So if you're wanting to say, here's what I want to do. I know myself well enough. This is my skill set. Who's doing stuff like this? Where should I go? Asking for lists is easier than asking for big questions. And be a bit more strategic about it. That's the stuff that I wish I would have done in my early undergrad. And that's what I'm doing now. I'm trying to think what else. In terms of networking altruistically, I think of the same thing, but for others. Like the example this morning was getting into a conversation in breakfast with someone who works for Arasha in ocean atmospheric sciences and stuff, and realizing like, oh, I have a friend who's a marine biologist and wants to work at Arasha, and why am I not connecting these two people? So then, again, learning from my own failure, I can't remember that guy's name. Good thing we have a program that I can go look him up in later. Like, so if I was more cognizant of that, I'd write it down really quickly and be able to pass that information on to a friend of mine who would be, maybe that's going to make a connection, maybe not. But putting two people into contact, like, that's fun. That's fun for me, for sure. I'm trying to think. Yeah, that's probably about it.
Dorothy?
I focused most on the networking for the common good, so I don't have a lot to say about my own networking, except to echo that I didn't get a lot of instruction in it, and that I am still not very strategic, but I can make small talk. I'm probably in between the two of you. I'm always like right on the line on introvert and extrovert. And I'm happy to meet new people, but I don't naturally think about networking. I don't always remember to carry business cards. And when you give me your card, I don't always know what to do with it. I've got like several boxes on my desk. And if I'm smart, I write how I know you on the back. But if I'm not, I might not even do that. So I have trouble following up sometimes. So here's one thing about your own networking. At the end of a meeting, write down all the people you met, and hopefully you have contact information from the meeting materials. And then you either send a follow-up email or something like that. Sometimes I never get to that stage, but I still remember, oh, look, I've got this person. So even though I don't network super well myself, I'm friendly and I like to work with others. And I have found jobs through networks. So it was sort of for me, maybe what you were saying, talk about what you know and love. But I woke up one day and said, I have a network. And it's mostly people that have my same kind of job at other Christian schools of about the same size. Now that's in part because we're not all tied together by our scientific questions. We're tied together by how our science and faith relate and how we deal with that with our constituency. And because that's a topic of conversation, then it also comes up how we could collaborate in the sciences or in other projects. So I have gotten several writing projects and collaborative projects through that network. And so I do some. But when I think about networking, I mostly think about helping other people network. And I often do what you describe, connect people that I think should know each other. And I will write an introductory email and I'll say, here's this person and here's this person, you will like each other, go for it. And then I just back out of that. I don't, like, I used up my brain space for that. It's now yours. But that is something that you could even do as an undergrad or a graduate. Any stage you're at in your career, there's somebody behind you. So there might be high school students, or there might be college students, or there might be postdocs, who's ever behind you, give them a hand up and think about how you can help them. One of the things that is specifically hard about networking is that some groups of people don't naturally get into the networks they need. That is particularly true for first-generation college students, international students, minorities, and in some fields, women. So I'm just going to give you the job of specifically, strategically planning how you can help groups that have trouble getting into networks get into them. I was just reading a paper about environmental groups and why there are so few racial minorities in mainstream U.S. environmental groups. And part of it is because people get jobs through informal networks. Well, gang, you've got a job. So here you go. That's something that you need to help solve. Now, one other thing that you can do, and I don't know if it's networking, but when I was 50, my husband threw a party and my friends came, and a group of them stood up and sang a humorous song with multiple verses. Almost every verse highlighted some way in which I made everybody else feel good because of something that I did that at least they could feel good about themselves. So it sounds like a roast, except that I acknowledge, I completely knew what they were saying. So one of my phrases, though I would not say this if I was trying to get a job, is Dorothy Moore's lowering the bar for all the rest of you. Now, that's not completely true. But let me just say, do humorously or pleasantly tell people about your professional failures. Not all the time. Not defensively, and not when you're raw. But when you're okay with yourself, it will make a difference in other people's lives. When they are at a point where they think, I am the only person in the world that thought they were, that wants to quit their PhD right before the end. No! 75 million people have that same thought, and just not telling you, but I'll tell you. Tell people about your reality, because it's not all going to be success. And that's all I
have. Let me take a quick poll here, segueing from Dorothy. How many of you are currently either grad students or postdocs? Raise your hand. Now, leave your hand up if you think your advisor or principal researcher or whoever oversees you has done a good job of teaching you to network and introducing you to their network. If not, put your hand down. So there still are a few hands up. I'm glad to see that. This is an expectation you should have of whoever is overseeing you, is that they are not only showing you how to network by example, but they're actually bringing you into their network. And when that happens, well, some of you heard Doug Laufenberger's keynote last night. Doug had his 65th birthday about a month and a half ago, and every single one of his former PhD students came back for it. Because Doug is a consummate mentor and introducer to networks. So it is a key part of the endeavor of scholarship going forward. And I think that's just as true if you are going into something besides the academic world. If you're going to be in industry or whatever, it is the networks that you build will often determine the research that you are doing 20 years from now. So, any questions from the audience? We've got about 5 minutes. Yes?
Regarding the point that you just made, that's not something that you can help, but your advisor decides. So what is the takeaway for us?
You can go and ask them. You can say, I feel like I need to be building better networks. Can you help me find my network?
Can I just add to that, as somebody who had an advisor who didn't do any of that? What I saw some of my colleagues do that helped was they found other faculty who were willing to do that for them when their own advisor would do that. So even though they're working in a lab under an advisor, he was, tenured, wasn't really interested in working with students. We, my lab mate and I, we were the last two students out of his lab. But my colleague found other faculty who said, yeah, we'll bring you in, we'll allow you to do that. So if your advisor won't do it, find somebody who will.
Yeah.
I do want to make one more comment about networking as it regards mentoring, that you can also remember that you are 5 or 10 years ahead of a desperate undergrad student who wants to hear from you. And I will gladly put you in touch with them. We just had a conference in Vancouver with the CSEA, this is exactly what we're doing now, but back in Vancouver. And that was the biggest takeaway from the students. They were like, who can I talk to who's doing what I'm doing but 5, 10 years in the future? And that's you. So I'd love to hear from you about whether you want to share your struggles with someone who desperately needs to hear about them.
And the reason to go to conferences when you're not presenting or don't have a poster or whatever is, in fact, to build those networks. And a lot of the people you will meet are the ones who are networkers. So.
And I could pass on an anecdote or the experience I had. I had a Korean PhD student who was beginning his thesis work. And he wrote me an email asking for an appointment. And so I made the appointment, and he was very, very nervous. And he said that he would like to change thesis advisors. And I said, fine, have a seat. Who was the thing you're working to? And I said, yeah, he's doing great work. And then I'll be always around to give you any help. And I suggested things in his research area that he might be interested in. And he nearly died. Because he said that, at least in the culture that he was from, that then you never, ever go to a professor and change your thesis advisor. But so then, this is just something that either in your own experience or in the experience of other students you might run into who are going through this kind of difficulty. Maybe this is an extreme case, but even what we talked about, to try to look for networking. One thing that's generally good about the educational system in this country is that, again, there are these opportunities for you to then consider the whole department, consider other people. And by and large, people who are, this is going to be awkward to say this, who are then too busy to help you with your networking aren't going to be the kind of people who will give you a hard time if you go ahead and look for other people to give them assistance. So I just point that out as perhaps an extreme cultural difference. But for those of you who, in your own experience or in the experience of other students who may be from some other educational environments, just to keep that in mind.
Yes?
I have a question. So as an incoming graduate student, so I heard some of you say that some of the people that you meet at conferences or have initial conversations with could become future collaborators. And I was wondering kind of what the process is like in between that, like having that initial conversation to becoming future collaborators, if you have experience.
I don't know, but you're looking at me. I don't know. It was a quick answer. But if you go to a conference, like I would go to the Ecological Society of America, meetings, then there's this wide array of different people, and sometimes there's a mixer, like there's a aquatic section, and you go to the aquatic section, and some people will actually have like a postdoc they're advertising, people will have projects that they're actually recruiting people to collaborate on, or take a business card and do say, I'm looking for collaborators. And I've seen that work really well. And there's even networks of researchers on certain topics at schools that are not tier one research universities. So there's like a distributed long-term ecology study that's done at all small schools. And that's, you could just ask to join that. So I don't know in your field how it would work, but.
So we're out of time. One closing word, your address book app on your phone probably has a way to scan business cards directly into your address book. And it's a very useful tool.
It's like you can't lie about stuff.
Tom?
It's the best.
Great. Well, we're going to move to the speed dinner again.